This is ESPN Radio.
From the Four Horsemen to the Headless Horsemen, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish still within shouting distance of the college football playoff after last night's rankings. But what are we supposed to do with some changes in language? And how am I supposed to get used to hearing LSU head coach Brian Kelly? It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, and we got a lot going on today. L. Duncan going to stop by. Jeff Darlington, get us caught up as we get towards Thursday night football. Couple of banged up teams in this one. Maybe a quarterback change going on for the New Orleans Saints. But Chris, we heard it in the SportsCenter update there from Christine Lisi. The college football playoffs came and went last night, the new round of rankings, and an introductory press conference for now LSU head coach Brian Kelly. Still feels very weird to say.
Yeah, that's going to be awkward for you for the next couple of months. I don't know how you're going to adjust to that because you actually played under the man. And I remember when we were having a conversation late last week about the potential for Brian Kelly to be taking another job, and you just didn't think it was a possibility because of all of the things that he had going on, not only professionally at Notre Dame, but also personally. He said he was in the middle of building a house on campus, and just the fact that he would seemingly up and leave overnight to become the next head coach of LSU just seems a little bit weird. But in listening to his introductory press conference today, it was clear that this was a move about being able to compete at the highest levels of the sport more consistently. It's not just about being able to get to a national championship, but it's about being able to beat a team that's on that level and win one. And so I think that's the big difference in terms of why Brian Kelly decided to make the move. He felt like he was a good enough coach to be able to get there, but in terms of the talent gap of the teams that he would be squaring off against once he got to the playoff, he didn't necessarily feel confident in what he was bringing to the table. So now it doesn't become about the players that you have on the field. It just becomes about the difference in the head coaches and being able to compete in that arena. And Brian Kelly feels more comfortable with that. So I think that's what the move signifies for him, just the opportunity for talent not to be the difference in him winning or losing a national title.
LSU head coach Brian Kelly will be joining Paul Feinbaum today on the Paul Feinbaum Show coming up at 4 o'clock Eastern. So it will be interesting because it's a very different set of circumstances you're playing in down there. Brian Kelly coached and had, we've heard, won at every level, but it's been different at every level. It's been development programs. It's been getting to Cincinnati and doing a lot of what we've seen Luke Fickell do there, getting to Notre Dame and getting comparatively much more talent. But now it's that next weight class up. The recruiting changes, certainly the geography changes. Going to be very interesting to see what he has to say about the plans and the immediacy here for LSU. But in the immediacy, we also want to hear from you. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hit us up 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football season's heating up. The fans are hyped. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And Chris, in the immediacy for college football, we did have another round of those CFP rankings that felt like they were getting grossly outshined by all these coaching moves. Big-time shakeup. Michigan, who beats Ohio State, gets Jim Harbaugh's first win against the Buckeyes in his career, jumps up to number two. They trail Georgia, who is still at number one. They are followed by number three-ranked Alabama, fresh off that Iron Bowl nail-biter. And then Cincinnati still hanging around at four, with Oklahoma State moving up two spots into the five spot, and Notre Dame at number six before we get to Ohio State, Ole Miss, BYU, and Oregon. And Chris, we heard last night, and I want to play this for you now, Gary Barta, the College Football Playoff Committee chair, who was asked about what is now, I think, started to preoccupy a lot of people's thought. You got Notre Dame sitting at six without a coach, with a very real possibility of making it into the playoffs should a pair of losses happen in the right spots this weekend. And so Gary Barta was asked, as a part of the College Football Playoff Top 25 special, how does the committee judge a team that doesn't have a head coach? This is what he said. And Chris, I understand that people are going to hear this and go, all right, well, Notre Dame's getting penalized for something that's out of the kids' control in this spot. And I think it's a good time to remind people, this is going to be a part of the decision-making process. It's not going to be the whole. And to me, the far more impactful part of the decision-making process that could keep Notre Dame out of the playoff if it's close is the fact that Wisconsin and Purdue decided to get bounced out the paint. Notre Dame has exactly zero wins against current CFP top 25 teams. And to me, that's going to be the more damning thing, with no chance to improve that on conference championship weekend.
Yeah, that's going to hurt. But the fact is that the team that they actually did lose to happens to be in the college football playoff right now. They're in the Final Four. So I understand what you're talking about with the schedule and the strength of schedule as far as Notre Dame is concerned. But they can only play who's on their schedule. And I don't know if they should necessarily be penalized if you're talking about being right there with another team that happens to be a two-loss non-conference champion. So I think that's the interesting part about it, because if we get some chaos that happens on conference title weekend, which is always inevitably going to happen, then I'd be interested to see where Notre Dame would be slotted in. Say, for instance, Alabama loses and Oklahoma State loses and Cincinnati ends up losing. Well, where does that put Notre Dame? Are they going to be automatically vaulted into the Final Four? Or do they all of a sudden have to worry about an Ohio State team that has two losses against CFP top 10 teams in Oregon and in Michigan? So I don't know necessarily how the committee is going to approach it, but it's clear that it's going to be close. And if Brian Kelly's departure ends up tipping the scales and ultimately working against those kids, then I think the NCAA and the college football playoff have a big problem in terms of the dynamic when it comes to head coaching searches and when they're allowed to actually leave their programs to take other jobs. Like, that's a problem for me. It still feels foul what Brian Kelly did a couple of days later after letting it sit. And I'm not sure that there's anything that can be done about it in the short term. But long term, this is something that college football as a whole needs to take a look at, because the kids shouldn't have to suffer and miss out on an opportunity to compete for a national championship because their head coach decides to bounce for the bag.
And Chris, the complicated part of this becomes, if you are Notre Dame, like you said, these opportunities are hard to come by, being one of four teams in the tournament here. And part of you could look at this and go, hey, if you're Notre Dame and you were on the fence at all about maybe promoting Marcus Freeman, their current defensive coordinator, who by all accounts is going to get a good long look at being the next head coach, if you were to announce him, you'd be able to keep probably a fair amount of the staff together. You'd be able to show the committee there's a fair amount of continuity here, but it still wouldn't guarantee you a playoff spot. It might help in the perception if push comes to shove on that spot. But for Notre Dame, I really think the priority has got to be, and again, this is the unfair part of the game, because if I'm them, I'm not doing that at the expense of going, doing the search that we believe is appropriate. And if it is, hiring someone from the outside, hiring Matt Campbell or Luke Fickell, if you deem it best as Jack Swarbrick, the AD, that's got to be it. This can't be a factor in that decision.
Well, here's the other part of the game, Mike, which seems interesting, because Luke Fickell's name continues to come up. If Luke Fickell gets hired as Notre Dame's coach this week before the release of the final rankings, how could that potentially impact Cincinnati? Like, I mean, I get it. If they beat Houston, they're going to be in. It feels like they're going to be in. But is that a consideration? Is that something that weighs against them? If they lose to Houston, obviously they're out. But I'm curious as to how that would potentially affect how the committee views them, because it seems like all along the committee has been resistant to putting Cincinnati in that position, because, you know, even though they have the undefeated record, based on their resume, they don't necessarily believe that they're one of the top four programs, one of the top four teams in the college football playoff. So all of this is fascinating to me. I'm interested to see how it plays out. No doubt that Notre Dame should have their pick of some top quality coaches around the college football landscape, but it feels like right now their kids could potentially be penalized for it and be held out of the playoff because their head coach decided to leave. And something about that just isn't right.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around right now, Chris. There has been so much change all at once in college football that we're finding a lot of these pain points here, where there were rules put in place, like the early signing period, that were supposed to help and benefit players, that now may be a part of the very reason you're seeing coaches hired and fired earlier and putting us in situations like this. All of that, we got a time to take a look at. But coming up in about 30 seconds here, we mentioned one of the big movers in all of this. Brian Kelly took the head coaching job at LSU. We will talk to a man who hosted the introductory press conference coverage on the SEC Network in about 30 seconds. We'll do that after this word from AT&T. Now, if there are friends and family members you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details.
A shocking move in college football as LSU is set to hire Notre Dame's Brian Kelly
as the school's next head coach.
Bug, LSU, your school!
Well, simply put, Brian Kelly's won everywhere he's been, and I think the one thing he doesn't have is a national champion.
My first reaction wasn't surprise. I can understand what is appealing about this to Brian Kelly.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, and it's time for some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. We head to the Goodyear Hotline now to welcome in Peter Burns, great host over at the SEC Network. He was actually hosting the introductory press conference coverage on the SEC Network that was at 1 o'clock today when Brian Kelly took the podium as LSU's head coach. But Peter Burns is also the host of Best Week Ever on ESPN Radio on Sunday mornings. I joined Peter Burns on Best Week Ever this past weekend, and he asked me about Brian Kelly and the potential of this LSU job before all of this came out. So, Peter, I just want to know, what did you know and when, and why did you not feel like telling me?
Can I confirm nor deny? And we go back and look at it, October the 18th, right? And Ed Ogeron let go, or you know, they decided to part ways. And on my show on SEC This Morning on SEC Network, Chris Doering had asked, hey, listen, who do you want? And I said, you call Brian Kelly and you make him tell him no five times before moving on. Because, you know, I looked up and down about who that wow factor guy was going to be and what LSU needed. And guys, LSU needed stability. Right, they've always had the talent. So it wasn't about, oh, who can recruit down at LSU. I mean, after Nick Saban showed once you get LSU or Louisiana athletes down there, you can win a title. So much so that the last three head coaches won a title there. It was a man that could bring some stability to that program, and I didn't think there was anybody out there better to do that than Brian Kelly. And holy hell, somehow, I hope Scott Woodward never listens to me on 99% of the things that I say, but that might have been the 1%.
Peter, one of the takes that people have been having about Brian Kelly going to LSU is whether or not he's going to be able to relate to the athletes down there, be able to recruit that footprint, being able to adapt to the culture that's down there. And you got strong opinions on both sides of that conversation. So as somebody that knows the lay of the land when it comes to the SEC, knows the boot, knows Louisiana, how do you see Brian Kelly's transition and how quickly do you think that he can get that program turned around?
Well, it's there's a lot to unpack there. Let's go back to the how big of a fit he is, right? I mean, Nick Saban sure as hell wasn't a fit when he came from East Lansing, right? And sure enough, look how, you know, he was able to I mean, he was a duck to water there. Same thing with Les Miles. You know, as weird as he was coming from Stillwater, he was able to kind of at least keep it afloat for the most time. And I think the fit question is interesting, guys, because I don't know if you'll ever find more of a culturally a better fit for a program and its people than Ed Ogeron. And that fell apart, right? Like it was not like, all right, well, you know, we're winning 10 games. Like that horrifically fell apart in 2 years. So the fit is something that's interesting, but not the end all be all. He's walking into a murderer's row, right? And he's walking in murderer's row, not only for the LSU fans, who I swear could have hired Lincoln Riley as offensive coordinator. They could have had Kirby Smart as defensive coordinator. And some LSU fan on a message board like Tiger Droppings would have been like, I don't know. Maybe it's not the best coaching committee or firm. But I think the biggest issue, though, is him going into this conference, which is – I mean, loaded. Jimbo Fisher now, if Lane Kiffin stays at Oxford, what Leach is building, Brian Harsin, we saw how hard that they can play. It's going to be tough. They have a good team. I don't see them being a 10-win team next year. But, you know, they're going to need patience. But I don't know if college football fans, especially LSU fans, have a whole hell of a lot of patience.
Well, talking to Peter Burns, our SEC Network host who covered on the SEC Network Brian Kelly's introductory press conference at LSU, what do you think patience does look like at LSU, Peter? Is this 2 years, 3 years before the heat really starts to get turned up?
Well, I think there's small things, right? And you know it as well as anyone. Does the offensive line look better? Like, one of the things, and there's not a whole lot I've been jealous of you guys over at Notre Dame about over the last, what, if he's decade as an LSU fan, but one of the things is I would always look at Gojo with you guys having great offensive line. And he talked about that. And that's something that LSU has struggled with. So I think that's a position group that smart LSU fans want to see that get a little bit better. And also, I think it's just a matter of what he's going to bring as far as the scheme. I think where Ed Orgeron kind of, you know, found himself in a tough situation is that he went with a first-time play caller and first-time defensive play caller on offense and defense. That's tough, right, especially in this conference. So to me, it has to look like some stability, and I'm very curious to see what happens on Marcus Freeman. If Marcus Freeman somehow doesn't get a head coaching job out of this, I would be absolutely shocked, whether it be at Notre Dame or backfilling Luke Fickell if Fickell gets the Notre Dame job. But if he comes to LSU, that would be a monster win as a D coordinator, because LSU almost hired him last year, but he decided to switch up and go with Notre Dame.
Peter, I got to ask you about a hire that's gone under the radar in the SEC over the course of this weekend. Florida making the move to hire Louisiana head coach Billy Napier.
Yeah.
What do you make of it, and what are your expectations for that program in the short term?
Poor Billy, right? Billy's a fantastic hire, man. And it's like, all right, we're gonna bring out the champagne. It's Billy Napier, an unbelievable recruiting guy. He met with Scott Strickland one time. Scott's like, this is my guy. I'm hiring him. And then it's like, Lincoln Riley, Brian Kelly, and everybody's like, all right. So I'm glad you did bring up Napier. It's interesting because you go back and talk to Napier and everyone around him. He had a great quote, and I think it was in The Athletic. Chris Vanini wrote a great article about his time in Louisiana Lafayette. He told a quick story about how as 11 years old, his dad got beat. And even though his dad was an unbelievable X and O guy, his dad got beaten in the high school playoffs. And his dad looked at him and basically said, you know what? It's because they just had better players than us. And he said, from that moment, I knew we had to recruit. He saw it under Dabo. He saw it under Nick Saban at Alabama. And that's what Dan Mullen did not do in Gainesville. That ultimately is why he's not there and probably better fit for the NFL game. So I think he'll be a better recruiter for that program. And now, guys, the margins for Nick Saban continue to whittle away. It's stupid to say that, you know, Nick Saban is done and by no means, but the margins in which there used to be the huge margins to win, California now is Lincoln Riley, right? Mm. You've got Brian Kelly, who's a legend. Jimbo's got it rolling. You've got, Billy Napier being able to recruit Florida. Those margins are slowly getting smaller and smaller each year.
It's going to be fascinating to watch this kind of new world order of college football begin to take shape at a time where we're talking about expansion. We've got teams ready to move conferences. All of it centering right back to where it just means more. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Peter.
Gojo, real quick. I was as the ESPN SEC Network anchor there for that interview. Can I be LSU fan talking to Notre Dame fan Mike Golic Jr.?
Oh, absolutely.
One second. It's Mr. Steal Your Girl. It's Mr. Steal Your Girl.
Get him out of here.
How you like them apples?
How
you like them apples, Gojo? Tell your...
Get him out of here!
Peter wow, Burns. The savagery of life. Peter Burns. I love it.
Man.
Love it.
Chris, I'm not going to lie. I thought he was getting ready to ask, you know, hey, what should we be ready for? What should we expect? How's Brian Kelly like his gumbo? None of that here. I should have known better. You let Peter Burns in the door, and he's going to bite you like that on the way out.
I kiss your girlfriend. Let's go. Let's shoot. Let's shoot.
My wow. God. Get him out of here. Who let him back in here? Peter Burns. SEC Network host, co-host of Best Week Ever with the much better Katie George Sunday mornings on ESPN Radio. All right, coming up next, while I try and go find Peter's address to pay a visit off air, we'll head out to New York and figure out how much more
Bing Bong
they can take there from the referees after last night's loss to the Nets here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And because all of our programming exists to remind me of what's going on at my school right now in the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, as you heard in the Sports Center update, Brian Kelly is now the head coach at LSU. And as we told you off the top of the show, and we'll remind you continuously, Brian Kelly, the new head coach at LSU, is going to be joining the Paul Feinbaum show coming up here at 4 o'clock Eastern. I can't imagine why he's not coming on this show anymore.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he knows you feel a way about it, as do the rest of the Notre Dame alums about their head coach leaving, especially when you're in the midst of the longest double-digit win streak in program history. I mean, this guy's put together five consecutive seasons when they've won 10 or more games. So for that kind of stability to be walking out of your program, it definitely feels like a shot. And it's going to take you guys a while to be able to recover from this one, even though you're probably going to get a damn good coach in his own right to replace him.
We probably are, but man, you can't tell our fan base that right now. They're having a very normal one on these interwebs here. You know who else is having a normal one after what went on yesterday? Tom Thibodeau, the head coach of the New York Knicks. So last night, the Knicks and the Nets played an absolute barn burner. The Nets get a 112-110 win. It was close down the stretch here before a pair of free throws ultimately iced this for the Brooklyn Nets. And that is exactly the story behind all of this, Chris, is the foul calls were almost entirely in favor of Brooklyn in this one, and they gave Julius Randle about the worst answer you can give a big dude who's out here getting hacked. Like, hey man, you're just too big for us to be giving you any of these foul calls here. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't understand why when we start talking about NBA refs, Scott Foster is always in the mix for making the worst calls in games. I don't understand it. The explanation that he gave Julius Randle doesn't pass the smell test. The last thing you want to hear as an athlete is, oh, because you're bigger, stronger, more explosive than the other guys, we're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt when it comes to certain foul calls, especially when you're in the paint and you're mixing it up in a physical rivalry game that is the Knicks versus the Nets in Barclays. So for them to give that explanation, for that crew to stand on that, I'm with Julius Randle on that one. I can completely understand why he would lose it at the end of a closely contested game and get that technical foul, because that's ridiculous. That would be the equivalent of a ref in an NFL game telling me as a defensive lineman, because I'm 6'8", 340 pounds, that they're never going to call holding on the offensive lineman that's trying to block me. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, it's clear that Julius Randle was continuously getting fouled, and yet the refs weren't calling it, and they were forcing him to kind of play through contact. And I loved what Tibbs had to say about it in his post-game press conference. Like, in the middle of his rant, he said, if you want to call the game tight, that's cool. If you want to call the game loose, that's another thing, but that's also cool. But it's got to go both ways. And it was clear last night with the discrepancy in the free throw shooting and the attempts that it did not get called both ways. So that is a problem. And unfortunately, the Knicks find themselves on the losing end of it. And the foul that I probably had the biggest issue with, Gojo, is the one at the end of the game on Mitchell Robinson on James Johnson. Like, it didn't feel like it was a foul. It looked like it was all ball. But to let two free throws determine the outcome of a game in that situation, I don't know, man. I feel a way about it. So, yeah, it wasn't a well-officiated game, and ultimately it ends up being a costly loss for the Knicks to what is now the best team in the Eastern Conference in the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, lest we not forget that as we were worrying about the Brooklyn Nets and everything going on around that team, it was when they were like the 3 or 4 seed in the East, and now they sit there at 1. But I'm with you, Chris. It is frustrating as a player, and even now as a broadcaster, when I watch games and I'm looking at the way things are going early, you see usually, all right, what are they calling on the perimeter with wide receivers? And you give it about a quarter, and then you realize, all right, right, wrong, or indifferent, if they're consistent with the way they're calling it, we all know as players, you're taught to, all right, we got to adjust to this. You scout the officials going into games, you understand what their tendencies are, and then you got to adjust based off what you're getting in-game on this. That didn't stop Julius Randle and Tom Thibodeau from both having something to say about it and feeling some type of way about it. Here was the star player and coach for the Knicks after the game. And you're probably going to get fined for all of this, Tom, but it's going to be well worth it, and especially at this point in the season, because that's the last thing you want to let become accepted, right, Chris? If you're talking about a team whose hallmark and his bread and butter is going out there and playing a physical brand of basketball, I mean, so much so that Kemba Walker is starting to find his way further and further out of this rotation, you have got to go out there and make sure the guy that is closest to a star player on your team gets a little something closer to the treatment.
Yeah, you got to have your star players back. But to your first point, I mean, the Knicks brand of basketball is physicality and defense, and you're going up against two guys that would be considered, what, top seven, top eight players in the NBA today. So, like, you need to know how the game is going to be officiated so you can have a plan of attack and how you're going to try to slow those guys down. And unfortunately, because the refs weren't calling it the same both ways, the Knicks could never get on solid footing as to how they were going to slow down James Harden and how they were going to slow down Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant scored 11 points in the last 6 minutes of that ball game. Like, let's not forget, like, he was the one that they were basically giving him the ball and telling him, clear out, go do your thing. And the Knicks didn't have any answers until that final possession where they ran a double team at him and they forced him to give up the ball to James Johnson, and a foul call by Scott Foster's crew ended up bailing the Nets out. But, I mean, there were no answers for James Harden and Kevin Durant last night. Now, a lot of that also has to do with the fact that the point guard position continues to be a sore spot for the Knicks. And even though Alec Burks stepped in and scored 25 points, you're talking about him being minus 11 in his plus minus. And James Harden going off for 34, 10, and 8. Like that was the James Harden that we expected to see coming into this season. Now, he got away with a travel on that three-pointer that he hit before the end of halftime. But, I mean, the tip dunk that he had in the middle of the third quarter, that's the James Harden that we all been waiting on. And if he can continue to play like that, then this Brooklyn Nets team is going to be a tough out. But, again, going back to how the game was officiated last night, you really don't give a team like the Knicks the chance to play really good team defense and give themselves a chance to win if the referees aren't going to call the game both ways. And that was probably the biggest frustration for all the Knicks fans out there, and clearly for the players and the coaches on that team.
Yeah, massive frustration. And again, for the NBA, not what you want people talking about the morning after a two-point win between the two basketball franchises with major renewed interest in New York bleeping city. So would probably like that not to be the case and to allow the basketball game to be the story from here on out. Because coming up next, we can have a conversation about them here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program, now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Because based on that officiating, you could have said that this game felt like the appetizer for the main course in the nightcap. What's the best team in the NBA look like as we get closer and closer to that Christmas Day line of demarcation? We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, and we will have plenty more reaction to, like we told you, Brian Kelly going on Paul Feinbaum in about 10 minutes here, 4 o'clock Eastern, on the Paul Feinbaum show here, because I cannot run with this at any waking moment of the day. We also want to hear from you, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, because, Chris, you and I were talking about this before we got on air today. It's that day where I think it's Spotify releases like the year-end raps for everybody here. So it posts the top five like songs and podcasts and everything that you listen to here, and, you know, basically really makes it seem nice that they're tracking every single thing that we do. And so we thought,
but it actually makes us feel good about it though, because we had a couple of people chime in on social media telling us about how much they love us and how we're one of their top five podcasts.
That is true. We do like that. And if you were one of the loyal listeners to Canty and Golic Jr., and we were somewhere in your top five, make sure you tweet that at Canty, at ChrisCanty99 and at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, so we can shamelessly retweet the compliments, because we are not above that. But we also figure we would take that time to check in and see. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. What was your top sports moment of the year? What would be in your top five of the year end for something that we saw in sports? Chris and I got our top five together for the time of the show that we're going to display to you guys coming up in about a half hour's time. But we want to hear from you on that as well, since we're doing the year end wraps thing. The calendar is flipped to December, and we're going to get you right on that. Now, in the meantime, Chris, we also had last night, we talked about the Knicks and Nets debacle of officiating. After that, we had a nightcap between what might be the two best teams in the NBA right now. The Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors squared off. Two best records in basketball. And even despite Devin Booker leaving that game early with the hamstring, the Suns were able to go out there and get the damn thing done, Chris. Are these the two best teams? I know the best team south of December 25th is a hollow title, but it felt like we were watching that for these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly in the conversation, but I think we also got to include that team at the top of the Eastern Conference in the Brooklyn Nets just because of the firepower that they have with James Harden and Kevin Durant, and knowing that at some point this year they're going to get Kyrie Irving back as well. So that team is also in consideration. But right now, as constituted and based on the kind of ball that these two teams are playing, yeah, I think these are the best two teams in the NBA. And last night, the Suns went out there and got it done, and you're talking about them missing Devin Booker for the entirety of the second half and still finding a way to beat a really, really good squad in the Golden State Warriors, a team that's as deep as anybody that can go 10, 11 guys in their rotation. And so the fact that they were able to get that done, I think it just speaks to how well they're coached by Monty Williams. And, you know, Steph Curry having an off-shooting night, you know, help their cause as well. I saw the stat this morning on SportsCenter, and I couldn't believe it, but last night was the first time that Steph Curry had taken 20-plus shots and hit below 20% of those shots. So it was just incredible how off he was. And then to compound that, you had all of the turnovers from the Golden State Warriors. I want to say they had 22 turnovers last night, resulting in 19 points for the Phoenix Suns. So when you're playing against a good team like the Suns, you don't have that kind of margin for error. But when your best player is having an off night, and then on top of that, you're giving away possessions, it's usually going to result in a loss. So I think that's what we saw on display last night. But we do get an opportunity for the grudge match that's going to happen on Friday in San Francisco between these two teams at the Chase Center. So the Warriors will have an opportunity in the short term for a little bit of get back against the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, the Warriors are going to have their chance. And as we talk about them, I think as we assess the best team in the NBA, I would certainly put Golden State up there. And a lot of that is also a futures bet, right? At some point, you're going to get Klay Thompson back. At some point, you're going to get James Wiseman back. The Suns were a topic of debate this week. And let's marvel a little bit. J.J. Redick, the former NBA vet, going at Stephen A. Smith on First Take on Tuesday about the Suns' championship window.
Basketball is a team sport. And we've talked about this every time I've come on the show.
Yes.
The Warriors are a great team.
Yes.
So are the Phoenix Suns.
I agree.
So are the Phoenix Suns.
This is levels to it.
But to
this
say their championship window has closed is asinine.
No,
it hasn't.
It's not asinine.
They're a better team than they were last year.
You apologize to me last week. You're going to apologize again?
They're a better team than they were last year.
You're going to apologize?
Their ancillary guys have all gotten better this year. Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, Cam Payne, Cam Johnson, Landry Shamet.
We're talking levels. And what I'm saying to you,
about
listen,
one player.
Phoenix is a championship contender. Phoenix is to be respected. What I'm saying to you is this. When I think about Brooklyn at its best, when I think about Milwaukee at its best, when I think about Miami potentially at its best, there's only one team I look at in the Western Conference and go like this. I don't give a damn who you put them up against. One, and that's Golden State.
Chris, the passion on both sides is admirable here, and I think part of it is Stephen A. is right. Like, he's looking out and projecting the way the rest of us do. And unfortunately, right now, for that Suns roster, it is very good. DeAndre Ayton is a stud. He made that turn last year. We know what Booker and Chris Paul can be in that backcourt on their best day, but it doesn't quite hit the same as the rest of those teams Stephen A. mentioned if they get to full strength the way they can.
No, it doesn't. And the thing that concerns me about the Suns is how much gas in the tank does Chris Paul have? Like, at the beginning of the season, I expect to get the best version of him because you're coming off of the offseason, you got fresh legs. But as the season wears on, as you go through the grind of the regular season in the early rounds of the playoffs, like, that's going to take its toll. And I'm just wondering, at a player at his age, how much is he going to be able to push in terms of being a difference maker for this team? Because we realize, as Chris Paul goes, is as the Phoenix Suns are going to go. Like, he's their floor general. He's the one that sets everything up. And if he's going to be what we saw at the end of their playoff run last year, if that's the version we're going to get, then it's not going to be good enough to be able to get out of the Western Conference.
Still plenty of time to sort that out in the NBA. Coming up next, though, we'll take stock of who the hell is going to be on the field coming up for Thursday Night Football. It is that time of year, folks. Stick with us here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.